You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
6:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. And I want to say a little good morning to Alicia, already chiming in over on the social media. So good morning, beautiful people, she says. Good morning back to you, Alicia. We appreciate it. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning, everybody. Glad you are here. Another busy day. We're going to talk a lot about Iran, of course, later on in the program. But we've got to start with just a few things that happened since we left and maybe since you went to bed. Because Iran, it's Iran. Are we going with Iran or Iran?
Iran.
I know, before people get mad.
It's hard because everybody has a different dialect and a different way of pronouncing things. And then I have a flat South Dakota accent, so it takes out anything.
I alternate because I don't like to be put in a box. As long as I don't say Iran, it ain't
there
Iran.
You go. He's a free spirit.
Iran. Iran. There we go. Iran.
So the U.S. State Department has ordered the mandatory departure of all non-emergency personnel in the six Middle Eastern countries that have been affected by this. There's actually 11 that are now in the fray over in the Middle East. Donald Trump made a little statement yesterday. He warned about a big wave of the U.S. attack, saying it's still yet to come in Iran. That's good because his cavalier attitude toward service people dying doesn't seem to be changing. And on that note, six U.S. service people have now died following a direct Iranian strike on makeshift operations in Kuwait. So there's a lot more.
There is a lot more. At least 787 people, we're talking civilians, have been killed by the U.S. and Israeli bombings across Iran since Saturday. And that's according to the Iranian Red Crescent this morning. Israel has said that it's conducting simultaneous strikes in Tehran and Beirut, claiming that it has struck Hezbollah centers of gravity in Beirut. We're going to have a foreign policy expert who's going to join us after 8 o'clock this morning, and we're going to be talking more about the situation throughout the morning and obviously monitoring things, bringing any updates that are important for all of us as well. But that's what we know as of right now, with many more headlines to come.
Yes. Since last week, we've been following, and you may have too, the Anthropic story. Mm-hmm. That is an AI company. They have developed Claude, which is doing very well. My friend who produces the podcast and uses AI at his regular job loves Claude, thinks Claude is the best thing. He's on LinkedIn and stuff telling everybody, if you've tried other things, you got to go to Claude. Anyway, Claude and Anthropic had a contract with the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. Big, lucrative contract, up to $200 million. Very nice. Well, last week, if you remember, one day we talked about Pete Hegseth and his Department of Defense telling Anthropic and their CEO, Dario Amodei, that, unless you give us full control, take the safety, the training wheels off, the safety guards, we don't want any of that. We want to be able to use your AI the way we want to use it. And Amodei went, well, no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And so Hegseth puffed up his chest, straightened his little American flag pocket square, and said, well, if that's the case, we're going to label you a supply chain risk. And then the next day, Anthropic came out and said, well, we're dropping some of our own self-imposed guidelines, mm-hmm. but that's separate. And I thought, oh, that's not going to be separate. Turns out it was separate. They held firm on their decision with the Pentagon, and Pete Hegseth has now labeled them a supply chain risk.
And that's an important label because it's usually only reserved for foreign adversaries like Chinese or Russian firms, not American companies. Now, what I also think is interesting is that this supply chain risk designation essentially ends Anthropic's contract with the Pentagon. And you mentioned the $200 million because that is going to be important going forward because this is kind of the standard bearer contract for other AI AI firms because others have not held as steady as Anthropic has over the last few weeks.
And we'll don't have a Claude that's doing so well.
They do not. Now, Anthropic says that this action is legally unsound, also unprecedented. The company plans to sue, saying that the Department of Defense does not have authority to actually interfere with broader commercial business. Imagine that, the government not being able to interfere in personal business. That's who? Well, this administration would like to push that designation quite often. This is a warning, though, I think, for a lot of other tech companies, because if you don't meet the administration's terms, you could lose that government business. Now, it turns out that your friend who produces your podcast is not alone when it comes to the love of Claude, because it actually jumped to number one on Apple's U.S. free app chart just a day after this administration moved to block its use by the government agencies.
I think this is where a lot of, well, the media companies and a lot of other places are making a miscalculation when they think it's better to go along and capitulate to the demands of this administration than it is to stand up and fight. I mean, Claude, I don't know. Oh, I know almost nothing about AI. I've used ChatGPT a few times. I don't know. Claude may, in fact, be a much superior product. It might be not too much better than ChatGPT or OpenAI or any of the others, but people may look at that, and especially people who are very involved in the tech world, it tends to lean a little more left. They're going to say, oh, this company is standing up. This is the company I'm going to back. They're going to get my business, they're going to get my money, they're going to get my support. Not as, you know, not that the other companies have bent a knee yet, but maybe these other companies can look at what Anthropic is doing and say, okay, we can still survive. Some of them probably can't if they don't have those $200 million contracts. And that's where, once you have economic blackmail, that's where the trouble starts.
Now, OpenAI, which has ChatGPT, did actually bend the knee. They basically are saying, we'll do whatever the government wants to make sure that these contracts exist. The dispute between Anthropic, though, and the U.S. government, it obviously, you can imagine, it comes with some big financial risks, right?
Yeah.
Anthropic expects roughly $14 billion in revenue this year, mostly from businesses using its AI assistant, which is, of course, Claude, for all of the coding in the office work that happens. And more than 500 customers reportedly pay at least $1 million annually to use Anthropic's tools, which does include Claude. I think this is an interesting argument, though, because artificial intelligence isn't just this far off futuristic debate anymore. It's being used for weapon systems, surveillance tools, military targeting, intelligence analysts. And the rules that are currently being set by this administration are essentially going to shape how wars are fought down the road. And as we look at what's happening in Iran, I'll get my pronunciation right yet this morning. You have to think that some of this has been in the back of this administration's mind, because this debate with Anthropic has been going on for weeks. And we also know that the debate about what to do in the Middle East has also been going on for weeks.
Right.
But our guardrails at this point, it feels like some of our guardrails are off. And when you are essentially getting involved, the U.S. government is getting involved in business, especially in Silicon Valley, that has to send a chill through Silicon Valley. And I know there's plenty of people in Silicon Valley who support this administration, but did they ever anticipate the administration going as far as to say, well, here's what you're going to do if you want to do business with us?
And it's different than in the past, where in World War II or other wars, you know, the U.S. tried to control the steel industry, and they tried to do it because we what steel does. This is steel. AI, there are still so many unanswered questions, and that's at the basis of Anthropic's objection to this, that what the guardrails that we have put in so that for the Defense Department to use are because we don't know exactly what will happen if they are not there. There hasn't been enough research. We don't know how this can be used if these safeguards are off. So to just allow the Defense Department to take this and do whatever they want with this. I'm sorry, I don't have faith that this administration is going to make the most ethical choices with a tool that might have unbridled potential.
I mean, and we're also in an AI arms race with China. So if these companies start feeling some sort of pressure to move fast without any of those guardrails or with government input, you have to really start thinking about who is going to be monitoring the safety of all of this, right? That's what my mind keeps going back to. I mean, who's going to decide the rules for AI in warfare? Is it going to be the government, or is it essentially going to be the companies building the technology who then feel like they have to give in to whatever the government wants because they essentially hold the purse strings? That's where I keep going with this argument with Anthropic, because a lot of people think this is minor on the peripheral. I don't believe this is. I think this is actually a bigger conversation that people are missing with everything else that this administration keeps throwing at us.
And just to remind people, the big stumbling blocks, when we keep saying the safeguards and the guardrails that Anthropic wants to put in, they don't want their product to be used for mass surveillance unchecked or autonomous weapons where there's no people involved, where judgment doesn't come in. It's just these weapons are sent out and they do what they're programmed to do, or the program makes the decision. So that's what Anthropic is like. No, we're not taking these off of there. And that sounds like a good idea to me. Again, I don't know anything about AI.
Right.
But I do know at some point you have to have humans involved. Especially
yes.
if we're going to be dropping bombs on another country.
I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. The idea of mass surveillance, unchecked mass surveillance, should scare everybody. Well, I'm not doing anything wrong. Why should I be afraid? I don't know, because maybe you don't want the government knowing everything you say, do, think, everywhere you go, everything you buy. I don't know, maybe that.
You know, and when you look at what happened with OpenAI after Anthropic didn't sign the deal, because they quickly, their CEO, Sam Altman, also opposes mass surveillance and fully autonomous weapons. He signed the contract as soon as Anthropic basically stepped out. He was like, no, we're not going to let that happen to us. And it also becomes more of a debate because Amadei, who is now the CEO of Anthropic, as you mentioned, he was actually an employee at OpenAI for many, many years in 2021. Yeah. So you can already see what this government is doing by creating that sort of tension between the companies and basically saying, well, if you don't do what we're asking, if you don't give us the technology we need for the warfare, for the mass surveillance, for to compete with China, whatever the laundry list is, well, we're going to make sure that you're basically shut out of this market completely, and we're going to award this to the person who's going to do exactly what we want. That's dangerous.
Very dangerous. And there's a lot of dangers, and they don't want it gone for good. They just want to, they just want to pump the brakes because they don't know what it's capable of. All right, when we come back, Greg Bovino and some, remember that name, and other federal agents are being investigated for their role in Minneapolis. It's going to be another interesting story, interesting day. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
It's 6:22 right now. We hope that your morning is going well. Thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. I am Jamie Martinson.
Good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. If you want to get involved, we'd love to hear from you. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. That's the phone number. That's the text number. They both go to the same place. Don't ask me how. I'm not an engineer. but this is good news, I'm going to say, just because the debacle that was the occupation of Minneapolis at least somebody may be held accountable. Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty has announced 17 instances of potential unlawful behavior by federal agents during Operation Metro Surge, and those are under investigation for possible criminal charges. So, you know, we've said from the beginning, when Minnesota was being shut out of the initial investigations, that you had to let Minnesota investigate. They're the ones who convicted Derek Chauvin. It's their state. They should be investigating. Well, it seems now they are investigating and things are moving forward. Unlike our DOJ and the Epstein case, at least Minnesota, good for you, they're looking into it. And we'll see what happens with this.
Yeah, and they're looking at a few different instances. One of them includes Greg Bovino, who was captured on video deploying a chemical irritant during a clash with protesters in South Minneapolis back in January. Another video shows him warning the crowd before throwing a gas canister as green and gray smoke filled the area and some individuals were hit with an orange spray. Mm-hmm. Now, Moriarty created the Transparency and Accountability Project. It's called TAP. For short, it allows the public to submit photos, videos, and descriptions of potential unlawful conduct committed by these federal agents. And it's staffed by county prosecutors as well as a civilian investigator, and it's already reviewing the 17 reported incidents at this time. There's going to be more investigations, I think, as well. Some of them already underway include actions by ICE and Border Patrol agents involving students at the Minneapolis Roosevelt High School. That was back in early January, when they basically stationed themselves outside the school and were targeting students as they were leaving and to and from. A lot of us saw the photo circulating on social media of what was happening at the high schools in Minneapolis during those raids.
It should be a lot easier for prosecutors now to look at, somebody's going to go, well, what about deepfakes? Let's take that off the table. There is enough video and photographic evidence of a lot of these incidents that it should be fairly easy for prosecutors to decide, does this rise to the level where we need to charge, or is it just run-of-the-mill misconduct that there's no point in us, because we all know prosecutors tend to take cases that they think they can win. Even if somebody is in the wrong, if the prosecutors don't think they can take this all the way, they're not going to do it. But This is a good step. Everybody who has footage should be in that area, should be looking at this TAP program and get those videos and pictures in. Because, again, you can lie if it's just your word against mine. Your word against mine, and I also have video and I have receipts, a lot harder. And we all saw the stuff Bovino was doing. You'd have to make a concerted effort to turn a blind eye.
Which I think is interesting, because he was actually sidelined and replaced by Tom Homan, who has a much harder public stance on immigration enforcement. However, we've seen Bovino's tactics and what happened as they played out in Chicago. Of course, a lot of the same tactics that he used, the heavy presence, the confrontations, the community backlash, and then he ended up in court there as well. And, you know, and at this point, I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens, because there is an ICE presence now already in the western part of the state. Yes. Obviously, now Bovino has been sidelined back to California. We know that Tom Homan is at the front and center of these ICE raids. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out in the western part of the state. We're going to actually talk to an advocate later this morning.
We're going to talk after 8 o'clock. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk more Iran. And, you know, the saddest thing for Greg Bovino is now he's back in California. He can't wear his big Nazi coat.
He can. It's warmer there, so it's harder to do so. Now,
if he's got to get a lightweight, a Nazi windbreaker.
That's right. Windbreaker. This time of year would be perfect. Now, Moriarty says that the federal government has refused to provide investigation materials, making the cases more challenging for her office. They have sent formal letters demanding evidence, but says that there has been so far no response from the federal government in these investigations.
Raise your hand if that surprises you. All right, no
nope.
hands here.
Nope,
I don't
no
know
hands
if you're
here.
Raising your hand at home. but I'm doubting it.
Yeah.
And this was the argument from the very beginning, that the feds were going to cover up and stall and put up any kind of roadblock to investigations that they could. And, you know, the supporters of these actions were once again, as they have been for 10 years, telling anybody who voiced concern that we were being hysterical. Why don't you trust the government? This is why you don't trust the government, because they impede investigations when it could show wrongdoing on their part. If they had ironclad cases about protesters doing stuff, you can bet that that evidence would be out there. We would be seeing it nonstop every day.
And, you know, we get told that the things like these databases that they're creating that Tom Holman has touted in the news don't exist, but they actually do, because people are being targeted based on their previous actions just a few days later. We've seen it over and over again. Not only
Alex Pretty was supposedly in one of those databases.
Yes, and it hasn't been just in Minneapolis. It's been in Portland. It's been in L.A. It's been in Chicago. It's been wherever there's been a major ICE presence that protesters, even if they're peaceful, are showing up and then being targeted by these ICE agents. So, you know, the fact that, good for Minnesota, good for standing up, good for carrying on these investigations. They said they were going to from the start. And if there's something there, there's something there. And it needs to be prosecuted if so. 6:29 right now, you are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We'll turn our focus a little closer to home. And the grocery stores are leaving Milwaukee, creating more and more food deserts across Wisconsin. This is the Civic Media Network.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning at 6:35. If you're listening in Appleton and Oshkosh, you're listening on WISS in Eau Claire on 93.5 The Tap, and in La Crosse on WLCX. Thank you so much for having us on. A little light rain falling in downtown Madison right now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Did anybody get to see the blood moon this morning on their way
to
work?
Too cloudy here.
It's too cloudy.
I was actually really angry about it.
I was very upset. It threw me into a tizzy. I had a little tizzy. A hissy. I might have had a hissy. I don't know.
Tizzy.
Could have gone from tizzy to hissy.
Hissy Ooh. Fit? Tizzy yep. fit? Some one of those two? That's what my kids used to say. Yeah.
Stamp my little feet.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of talk, and if you're not familiar with the term food desert, it basically describes an area there where access to fresh groceries is limited, whether it's a neighborhood in an inner city or a small rural community where the places you can go to grocery shop are either very limited or non-existent. Well, this has hit a crisis point in Milwaukee where the access to fresh food has been disappearing because grocery stores across the city are closing. And retailers are sometimes closing these stores with little or no notice. So you may have gone grocery shopping at your local Century or Safeway. I forget all the grocery stores in Milwaukee. but then the next day, they're gone. So all of a sudden, residents are left with nowhere to buy groceries. And it has become alarming how many grocery stores are leaving, and not surprising, the neighborhoods they are leaving.
Yeah.
I mean, the neighborhoods where they are booming.
And to your point, since 2021, 9 grocery stores have shut down, 5 of those on the city's north side. A University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee study actually found some pretty big disparities. Predominantly white neighborhoods have more than 3 times as many supermarkets as predominantly black neighborhoods. Also, to your point about where they're shutting down, and white neighborhoods also have more than twice as many supermarkets as predominantly Hispanic neighborhoods. From 2021 to about 2023, Milwaukee lost 4 major grocery stores, all north of I-94, and those closures have continued into 2025 and into the early part of 2026, including Pick and Save, Aldi, Century Foods, and River West Co-op. This is happening, as you mentioned, all across the state, and it becomes such a problem that people end up going to convenience stores to buy food where you don't have as many healthy options and you're paying much more much more for it.
That's
groceries.
The key right there. Both are very important aspects.
Yes.
But think about it. a lot of us look at the weekly flyers from the grocery stores and we decide, oh, okay, look, this place has this on sale and this place has this on sale. And we can compare and we can try to make our grocery budget last a little longer.
Right.
If you're in one of these food deserts, you don't have any choice. And as we've talked about before, when we talked about, our weight loss and things, healthy food is expensive.
Yes.
Vegetables are expensive. Lean meat is expensive. It's not ramen and chips. Those
right.
things are cheap, but they're not good for you.
They're not good for you. And, besides Milwaukee, we're also looking at neighborhoods in places like Racine and Beloit that are in these food deserts. There's rural northern counties like Iron, Ashland, and Sawyer who have food deserts. There's also central counties like Adams and Juneau. And then there's also tribal communities that are also facing the same type of food desert that we're talking about right now in parts of Milwaukee. And I think this is an interesting conversation. And if you do want to chime in or you live in an area where there's food deserts, please let us know this morning. That number is 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. Call or text. We'd love to hear from you if you live in an area with a food desert and what people in your community do. I know there are places in this state that literally have no grocery store in their local towns, and people are driving 20 to 30 minutes just to buy fresh food.
That's what I wanted to say. Because that's the answer, right? So people, if you live in the suburbs, if you live in a rural community, maybe you're used to driving places. In the city, a lot of people are used to live within walking distance of a grocery store. They would use public transportation to get there. Well, now if their local store closes, the difficulty of using public transportation to get there is unbelievable. Maybe they don't have a car, they can't drive, they're senior citizens, things like that.
Yep.
Getting an Uber is expensive. You can't just Uber back and forth to the grocery store. So it's not an inconvenience where
right.
you just, travel a little bit further. How is the question.
And you also have to think of what happens to the economies of those towns, right? Or those parts of cities. Mm-hmm. Because the local dollars start leaving the community when you have to drive 20 or 30 miles just to buy some food.
Yeah.
But you also look at the fact that when those stores start to close, like we just named, and you saw what was happening in Milwaukee, that means you're also losing local jobs. So people that were once employed in those areas no longer have anywhere to go on a daily basis. Nearby small businesses start losing customers. The health suffers when families rely on those convenience stores instead of the fresh food. Transportation becomes a bigger burden, as you were mentioning, especially when we're talking rising gas prices now with the Middle East conflict. And once one of those full-service stores actually closes, it's incredibly hard to get one of those back right. into your area or your town. And so now you've just started compounding the issue. And it's not just an urban issue. This is happening all across the state and all across the country as well.
Well, it's a vicious circle, right?
Yes.
It's self-fulfilling prophecy. The neighborhood is bad. We don't have a lot of business. We're going to shut the store. Oh, look, now the neighborhood has devolved even more. So, or the town, because everything else, based on all the things you just listed, all these other things have closed. All these people now are having to drive to work farther and farther. And it's, so now, if I'm grocery store chain A and I closed, or independent grocers. We used to have a nice network of independent grocery stores, especially when you got into more rural communities. Mm-hmm. It would be, like an IGA, but owned locally. Well, now grocery store chain A leaves. The neighborhood devolves even farther than when grocery store A was there. Now grocery store chain B is not going to come in.
Right.
Just because, well, where are the people? Well, they left because grocery store A closed.
Yeah.
Oh, well, sorry. You're out of luck.
And again,
enjoy your Dunkers.
And again, if you want to chime in this morning, or you live in a place that has limited access to groceries even chain stores, sometimes we'd even take a chain store in some of these communities. 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. Now, when it comes to the case in Milwaukee, Brian, the retailers have offered very limited explanations as to why they're pulling out from these areas. Some have cited efficiency or long-term business decisions. Theft has been mentioned as a factor, even though city leaders have questioned that reasoning. Smaller local owners say rising costs, aging equipment, and lower customer traffic makes it really hard to stay open. But what we do know is that the closures hit hardest in neighborhoods that already face challenges like segregation, housing inequality, and financial instability. In fact, about 17% of Milwaukee households do not have a vehicle compared to about 7% statewide. So that goes back to the point you're saying. Now it becomes harder to get yourself there.
How are you going to get anywhere?
There was a really interesting article I read in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel a few weeks ago about a mobile grocery store. Because of this purpose right here, it's essentially a truck that's loaded with groceries that pulls up in certain areas of
like a bookmobile,
a little bit. Yeah, but you can go in and you can get your groceries. And I think that's a novel concept and one that especially in places like Milwaukee, when you are dealing with the food deserts in these urban areas, I think that that is going to become vital to making sure that families in those areas have everything that they need. Scott is chiming in over on our text line this morning, listening on WMDX. He says Walmart is 25% of every grocery dollar spent in the U.S. Once a Walmart opens, you can almost guarantee your local grocery stores will disappear.
But that could be true, but that's not this case in Milwaukee.
Right.
There's no correlation. These neighborhoods don't have Walmarts either. These
right.
neighborhoods that are being affected, again, and it's, listen, you have to call out the facts. It's black and brown neighborhoods where this is happening. And I can imagine if in some of these more downtrodden neighborhoods, they don't have disposable income to spend a lot at the store. Everybody, I don't care where you live now. If you're not watching your pennies when you go to the grocery store, God bless you. But yes, the business is not going to be there. So they can use the underperforming stores. Mm-hmm. Well, are they underperforming in general across your whole portfolio? Yeah, probably. How are they doing based on that neighborhood? You have to pull some out and do a little. It can't all just be apples and oranges. Sometimes it's got to be apples and apples.
One survey, as we talk about Milwaukee, found that residents near some of the closed stores were paying roughly 50% more just for basic groceries. Think about this. When we're talking about certain communities where you already have income disparities, where you already have people maybe living on a fixed income, and now you're talking about asking them to pay 50% more for a basic necessity in life. Because food and grocery stores should be part of our basic community infrastructure. That should be in urban Milwaukee. That should be all the way up to Hayward. That should be everywhere across the country. That should be part of our basic infrastructure of our communities.
I agree 100%. I'm entertained by Cam. He's in Appleton
He's
texting in. He says, if Walmart opened and closed down Cub Foods when I lived in Minnesota, I think I would have rioted. Cub is the only one who has the Broster pressure fryer, and they use it for chicken. And they also make JoJo potato wedges.
He's not wrong. I do love myself being from Minnesota at one point in time and living there. I do love myself a good Cub Foods.
I worked in the produce department for a grand opening of a Cub Foods. I worked there for about a year. We did the whole produce wall. It was gorgeous.
I love a good Cub Foods. We do have Ollie calling. She is calling from the Northwoods this morning. And Ollie, what do you have for us today?
Well, I just would like people to know, too, how hard it is on the small local grocery stores and how much harder it will be when they cut the SNAP program and Medicaid, because if people who have SNAP can't afford to shop in those little stores in the little towns, those stores are going to have to close, and they have no rights to get to places to grocery shop because the majority of them are elderly people.
Thank you so
much
for the
call. That's a very good point, Ollie.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, it makes sense. If you're cutting the way people buy their groceries, not just where they buy their groceries, but the actual benefits that they need to get those groceries, again, things just on pay. For a corporation, I understand. On paper, things may look good.
Mm-hmm.
But It reminds me, and I'm sorry to equate this with National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, when Brian Doyle Murray says, sometimes something looks good on paper till you see how it affects the little people.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, folks, we are the little people.
Yeah.
You and I are the little people.
Yes, absolutely. And in case anybody's wondering, in Milwaukee, officials there have declared a food apartheid as a public health emergency. They have a task force that's been created to attract and retain grocery stores. They have proposed ordinances that would require stores to give 60 days notice before closing. And the city's also exploring additional funding to help those stores stay open. You are listening to Daybreak. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Christy Gnome thinks someone is watching her. We'll find out who it is. It's not a dog, I bet. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
6:52 right now. Have you ever noticed when we're chatting on the stream in between shows, we make Parker sweat just a little bit because he's like 5 seconds, 10 seconds.
Is Parker just...
I don't like cutting your mics before we have to come back, but like, guys.
It's fine. It's your
it's
job.
It's showtime.
Hey, man.
We have a lot to say.
I know
the
you
show
do.
Continues.
That's why we have 3 hours now.
The show just continues and continues. We don't, you know, a lot of people would take a break. During the break.
We have a lot to say. There's a lot going on. And we have people watching on the stream that want to hear more from us. Or maybe they don't. Maybe they want us to take a break.
Yeah, they're like, can you guys quiet?
Can you just play the Midwest Farm Report, please?
Welcome. I would have taken bets that was a song you were going to play coming back with this. Fine choice. Right on the nose.
Should have put money on it. Come on now.
Yeah, well, listen. There's no odds there.
Come on now, Brian.
Everybody would have gone, yeah, duh, what else is he going to play?
Exactly.
Anyway, the reason Parker played Ray Parker Jr., somebody's watching me, nice tie-in, is because, our distinguished Secretary of Homeland Security, the dog-loving, costume-wearing Christy Gnome, has said that she recently discovered that employees in her department installed software on her phone and laptop to spy on her. Dun, dun. Cue dramatic music. Yes, she was on a conservative podcast.
Yes.
Which one? There's thousands
of them. There's a lot of them, yeah.
Everybody with a microphone. Well, she said that her team, by chance, Jamie, just by chance, because we're always just by chance sweeping for eavesdropping software, right? They found a secure room called a sensitive compartmented information facility on a university campus. She doesn't say which one.
Right.
That had, quote, secret files that nobody knew about on them. Dun, dun, dun.
So here's my question.
Only one?
They just randomly found... Well, yes, I have multiple. The biggest one that's going through my mind is all of a sudden they just found a skiff. A skiff on a university campus that nobody knew about and was just randomly there and... How does that happen? Most places don't have a skiff. We just had to explain to most people listening what it was, what skiff stood for. I can't imagine that this is just a random thing that you find on some sort of university campus.
Jamie, if you're looking hard enough, you can find anything.
Okay,
Christy Gnome is snooping around. She and her team are always, they're just wandering university to university. Oh, you got a skiff? Got a skiff? What do you got in there? You got any secrets on me? Any big secret files? I wonder what's in her secret files.
I can only imagine with Christy Gnome.
Makeup tutorials?
At this point, it might be how to get back into the good graces of the president because she has been sidelined a little bit since Minneapolis. But she actually said that the room was found when an employee happened to just notice a door, ask some questions, and then looked into it. If it's a skiff, it didn't seem very secure if you could just open the door, but whatever.
No, it's like the Situation Room at Mar-a-Lago. You just don't pull the curtain back. Hey, what's going on in here, fellas? Uh-oh. Wow, I shouldn't be seeing this.
The materials, according to Gnome on this podcast, that were found have been now turned over to attorneys. Now, if the head of the Homeland Security is saying that her own department was spying on her, okay, that's probably a serious allegation. Obviously, they oversee border security, disaster response, cybersecurity, counterterrorism, terrorism. If it's true, that means that there are major breakdowns in leadership, trust, and security inside a really powerful agency. So this story should give you pause.
Do you have any question, though? Does that surprise you that people who have been there their whole lives, career people in the Homeland Security Department, are looking at this wannabe actress and thinking, oh, no, we've got to do some? Because everybody's been calling for her resignation.
Yes.
Not everybody. A lot of people in Congress, a lot of U.S. citizens, calling for her resignation because she, like Kash Patel and Pete Hegseth, are in way over their head and are not serious people. I would not be surprised if there's some whistleblowers who are trying to get some information to release to force the president's hand. So it wouldn't surprise me.
No, it wouldn't surprise me either, I guess, at this point. I just think that this is the department, right? When you think about DHS, obviously been in the news because of the ICE raids, but this is also the department that has a role in election security, infrastructure protection, and coordinating the state and local law enforcement. And this team didn't know that there was a SCIF at this university and that there were just some random files in there. Come on now. I don't
either,
have a lot of trust that in the
think,
process, if this is the case.
Exactly. And they either think we're really dumb or we know they're really dumb. So somebody, there's some ineptitude and stupidity running around, and they're trying to shift it to, look, our crack investigator saw a door. Jamie, I don't know about you. I walk by, I don't want to say hundreds of doors. I walk by my fair share of doors during the day.
Of course.
Probably no more than the average American, but rarely do I go, what's in there? I bet there's something nefarious going on behind that door.
And then
that's where the mops are.
Then I find a magical skiff that's just sitting there with files just in it. Like, what?
And then you know exactly how to get on and find everything and go,
I mean,
so you know how to run this too?
It's just the amount. I'm kind of speechless at this point. Really, this is just the type of chaos that we've been seeing throughout this administration since the very beginning. There's confusion, and that is obviously starting to ripple into other parts of what is happening in the world, right? Because there is no leadership at the top, and so that means when there's no leadership at the top, then we're going to start to struggle in the long form. And that's what we're starting to see. And, you know, honestly, this is also a lot. This should also lead to questions about public distrust, whether there is some sort of whistleblower involved here, whether there is just ineptitude by staff. These could have been actual files, right? We've seen what this administration likes to do with just files. They like to put them in a bathroom.
So I don't know. I don't know if they were in the box in the bathroom. We'll see. We're going to take a deeper dive into Iran because both the president and little Marco had something to say about it yesterday. So we'll get into that and so much more when Daybreak comes back on the other side. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.